What's going on with you? We're back. It's another episode. This is all very exciting, I'm sure. It's the most exciting thing to happen on a Sunday anyway. I actually hate Sundays. They're just really shit. Like, nothing ever happens. And I like the shops close early, even though I don't really need to go to the Anyway, I'm rambling on about things that are not actually important. I will now proceed with the episode and ramble on about things that are important, because there is a very, very important difference, you know. But we're back. Let's do this. If my voice sounds different, it's because I'm recording this and I've like only just woken up. It's very early in the morning, and so if I sound really tired, it's because I am. But, you know, it means you get, like, it's like having that experience of, like, if we were roommates or something, and I was really tired and we were just, like, discussing things over breakfast. It's very that. I promise not to fall asleep. I know that if you've listened to this podcast for a long time, there are some early episodes where I actually do, like, very, very early, because I used to record them all, like, super late at night, and I would actually just be, like, lying down, and then I would end up falling asleep. But, I mean, you'd think I would have edited that, but anyway, I'm awake, I promise. I may not sound like it, but I actually am. If you came here for an update on my progress in Mario Kart Tour, I am in second place in my ranking because Tokyo Blur is one of the tracks in the cup this week, and it's such a shit fucking track because there is basically nothing that you can use to get points, so that's really dragging down my score, and I'm really pissed, but I'm happy to take second place. I can live with that. I've been having a wonderful time with my amazing team of baby characters. I've got baby Rosalina, baby Peach, baby Daisy, and the little Koopalings. We stand them too. I count them as baby characters. Anyways, we're still having a good time. We're still having fun. And I feel like maybe with everything I've learned from Mario Kart, I could probably actually learn how to drive now. But I won't, because, you know, I don't trust myself. And you'd be right not to trust me either. So I would like to tell you that this will be the only mention of Mario Kart, but I mean, I don't want to start things off on a lie. Okay, so I know I said I was going to get into the stuff of the episode, and I will, I promise. But should I become, like, a gaming YouTuber, but, like, only with Mario Kart? Is that a thing? I think it would be fun. Like, I mean, I don't actually watch gaming YouTubers. I just know that they exist, so I don't really know anything that it entails. But it would just, it would just be me, like, playing Mario Kart and having fun. And the only other thing I know about gaming YouTubers and streamers and whatever you call them is that a lot of them use racial slurs randomly all the time. And I can promise you, I will not do that. So I'll be like the unproblematic gaming YouTuber. Let me know. Like, send in a voice note, or, you know, leave a comment on the website, or send me an email if you think I should do that. Do you know what? You probably shouldn't. It would be ridiculous. I'm absolutely not as good at these things as I profess to be. But maybe that would be the actual fun aspect, is just watching me badly play Mario Kart. We'll see. Smoke pours from the house like we burned it down. The whole village runs, crowding around the windows, watching smoke snake out until all that is left are two lovers, red-faced, glowing, struggling to explain with ever-growing embarrassment that I am an unwelcome distraction when you are killing it in the kitchen, and it's just a bit of burned shortbread. I begin to miss the mystery of the city, where nobody knows anybody, where I could get kidnapped and brutally murdered on the London Underground, and nobody would bat an eyelid or peer over their broadsheet at the noise. But then I remember the sweetness of each smiley face you put on every text, the bluebells that live in your lapel, the extra hours you survive each Tuesday so you can wake up early to bake me shortbread when I am not around to distract you. So it turns out I'm not just my own kitchen's worst nightmare, but probably everyone else's too. I've never professed to be good in the kitchen. I would argue the opposite, just to like preempt it and say, look, I'm not very good at this. But it turns out that I distract other people, apparently, so I'm told. I can understand it because I start talking to someone or whatever, and then suddenly, oh shit, everything's burning. So I decided to take that and sort of explore not just that moment that happened, but also like the bigger picture of that relationship. This is again from the project that I'm going to be releasing soon. It's a collection of things where I look at different moments and different connections from my past, and I look at them through a closer lens. And you know, one of them, it was this whole thing, and we were so different. And so I had this specific memory. I was at his house, and he was making shortbread, and he burnt it because apparently I'm a big distraction. And other people who lived near him like ran to his house because they saw smoke, and they came to his house like they were the fire brigade or something. And I just remember thinking, what the fuck? What? Because, you know, it was weird. It was weird to me, I think, because I wasn't used to it. But he didn't see anything weird about it. And, you know, he explained to me later, you know, it's a very close-knit community. Everybody knows each other. Everybody's friends. Everybody, you know what I mean? And I was like, And it felt familiar to me because I grew up in the country, in England. And I hated it. I've always felt like in my heart, in my soul, in my spirit, as it were, that I'm a city girl. I like being, you know, where there's action and drama and public transport that actually turns up on time and isn't absurdly expensive. I like knowing that there's a local shop near me that isn't like, you know, half an hour walk away. And I like being in a place where not everybody knows everybody. I like knowing that I can walk down the street and not see like five or six different people that I know, I grew up with and whatever. It's not that I hate those people. I mean, don't get me wrong, I hate some of them. But I just, you know what I mean? I like to live and to exist in like this, you know, sort of situation where things are a bit mysterious, you know. And so going back to that situation where everybody knows everybody, although nobody knew me because I was just a visitor, it was very weird. And I was like, oh, so you're not weirded out that there was a tiny bit of smoke coming and, you know, half of your community just ran down to your house? And he was like, no, that's normal. They thought that there was something wrong. And I was like, oh, Right. And you don't, you're not freaked out. Okay, all right. And I just thought, you know, it's weird how we can have such different perspectives on that. And on other things too, because there are so many different things that we have different perspectives on and see things differently. But we were united on one thing that was arguably the most powerful thing. And that was the way that we felt about each other. We were so different, but we agreed that the other was pretty damn swell, you know? One thing I will say though, because I've just realised how that sounds, and I sound like that clip of Ellen where she's like, oh, it's okay to be friends with war criminals. It's not okay to be friends with war criminals or to go out with them, even if you fancy them. I don't think there's anyone really that fancies George W. Bush, but you know, just in case. If you like my hot take on the whole Ellen thing, I know I'm like going wildly off course here and talking about something completely different, but I think that it was a bit naive of her. And I think maybe it's because, you know, she lives in a life and a position where, to be quite honest, the actions of the government don't really affect her that drastically. And so she doesn't have to think about it. And she can say, well, we can disagree and we can still be friends, because the things that people like George Bush did had no real effect on her life. And I think, I mean, it's not a unique thing to her. Like, I don't mean to pick on her, because other people do it too, and to a worse extent. But I just thought it was a bit, you know, cringe for her to like really use that as her defense. I don't know, man. It was also very cringe because there was a blind item that implied that all the celebrities that replied to her, like agreeing with her and sharing the clip and saying, yeah, I completely agree, love comes first and all that nonsense. There was a blind item that implied that she basically like contacted all of them and begged them to do that so that it wouldn't look like she was completely off the mark. And I find that hilarious. That is just so funny to me. But anyway, back to what I was talking about. Like, when I say we disagreed on things, I don't mean like, you know, we were like, you know, disagreeing on like major things like Iraq or something, because we agree on that. But like, I mean, like, you know, little things like, you know, him loving this kind of tight-knit community, you know, isolated country lifestyle, and me looking at that and thinking, well, that's my idea of hell. You know, things like that. But we could still, you know, I guess being in love with each other was our breakfast at Tiffany's, you know. That was the one thing we had. And maybe that's why it all went to shit, I don't know. But what I will say, even though the shortbread was a bit burnt, it was still nice. Because shortbread is always nice. That's another thing that we agreed on. If you ever get the urge to look me up, to hook up, to check up and find out what I'm up to, don't. I've spent so long trying to stand up, to grow up, to be the person I knew I had the power to be before I met you. You're not the worst person I've ever met sometimes. Sometimes I don't even regret not telling you to fuck off when you asked for my number. Sometimes I look fondly on my time as your sexy midnight stranger. But those times are small and insignificant, and I avoid them so I don't emulate them in my usual impressionable way. I'm trying, through tired eyes, to see myself as someone who was never cursed. Because I'm tired of feeling like a fool for falling into the exact traps I was so sure I was too smart for. Though those days are far away, it's easier to wear the image of a survivor if you aren't lurking in the lobby of my heartbreak hotel, waiting to check me out and fuck me up all over again until I am trapped, violated into being a victim for the rest of my life. So don't. We know, both you and I, that you won't listen. But if you ever loved me, or even just liked me a little, don't. I very much feel like that is kind of shouting into the wind, because there are some people who will damage you, and then it's like they spend the rest of their life trying to pretend like they never intended that, and trying to draw you back in and act like if you give them another chance, things will be different. And it's not going to be different. It's not. It's like they're obsessed with not you, but the idea of keeping you, because they don't want you to be free. They don't want you to rebuild yourself and be happy. And they can't really be persuaded when you say things like, if you love me, leave me alone, because they don't, you know? Because you're an object to them. You're not a person. You're just a thing that they feel is theirs. And I mean, what do you do about that? I guess you just kind of keep trying to push through to their sense of decency. But if a person doesn't have one, then what? And I feel that there are some people that don't. I know that we're all supposed to think that everybody has something redeemable about them, and, you know, not everybody is terrible and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know if I believe that. I believe that there are some people who do not have a sense of decency. There are some people who are just bad fucking people. And, you know, maybe I encountered one, and that's unfortunate for me, I guess, but because, you know, at this point, it's weird, because I go through phases where sometimes I want them to be sorry, and I want them to tell me that, and I want them to be honest and say, what I did to you was fucked up, and I'm sorry. And I want them to mean it, because they've said sorry before, but it's never genuine, because like 5 minutes later, they go back to the exact same behavior. I think I may have actually talked about this person before, I don't remember, but you know, I want it to be a real sorry. But then sometimes I don't want to ever hear from them again, and I want them to like disappear, and it's like, you know what I mean? It's really difficult, because it's like, there is a part of me that still kind of feels like it needs closure. And it's like, how do I shut that part of me up and accept that that's never going to happen? Because this person is never going to be legitimately sorry for what they did, because they're a bad person. Some people are just bad people, you know? And they're not capable of being sorry, because they will never accept that they did something wrong in the first place. Not really. They might say something to be manipulative, but if they act the exact same way directly after that, then they can't have ever really been sorry, and they don't understand what it is that they did. So, you know, it's like, how do you move forward and accept that you're not going to get that closure? You're not going to get that apology. It's not going to happen. How do you move forward and forget that and keep going and keep building yourself up and making yourself stronger when you're missing that one thing that you feel like you need? Like, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out. Maybe I'll get it. Maybe I won't. I don't know. Life is a complex journey. I'm just figuring it out. Are you looking for a platform where you can have your voice heard? Find your home and find your voice on Rumble, the brand new video platform where you can share your thoughts, express your passions, and find like-minded people and creators. Download Rumble from the App Store or visit rumble.me to find out more. Art is ludicrous. Art is loud. Art is your heart finding flight, glowing and gliding, colliding with the limits you live by, growing and shining until your heart casts a shadow that leaves you so sure that the whole world could be yours if you wanted it. Yes, art is loud, ludicrous, life-changing, heartbreaking, passionate, limitless, life-affirming. Until art is silent, until art is complicit, until art looks the other way. And she always does, because while art declares herself loud, ludicrous, life-changing and limitless, art is also selfish, art is egocentric, art is a social climber, art is a networker. Art would like her fans to know that she wouldn't work with somebody that she believes to be an abuser of women. Art says that she still doesn't understand the whole story, and that it's not really her business. Art says that he's an incredibly sweet and gentle man. Art says he was never inappropriate with her. Art says that she believes women, just not that woman. Art keeps her feminism as a deep cut. She only plays it at concerts when the audience is already booing, because Art does not realise that slick production is not enough to cover up the crime of complicity. Art does not see itself from the outside. Art does not realise that every line, lyric and rhyme from her mouth is replaced with a simple but sad phrase. I want to be famous, and I'm willing to sell out other women to get what I want. So if you haven't guessed, today's luxury hot take is, if you are a woman in the creative industries, or any industry really, and you stand by and you happily work with somebody or share a platform with somebody who is abusive, then you don't get to call yourself a feminist. I'm out here declaring myself the queen of feminism, and I'm here to tell you, if you are working with abusive people, you should be held accountable for being a fucking coward. So I was thinking about this for a lot of reasons. Firstly, I was thinking about how there are a lot of people in the poetry scene who share a platform with people who have a history of being abusive to women, and there are multiple women who have come forward about these people, and they are still getting booked, they are still getting celebrated, they are still getting nominated for fucking awards. And for what? I'll tell you why. It's because people enable them. It's because people say, you know what? It's okay that you beat the shit out of multiple women. It's okay that you harass and objectify women. It's okay that you, you know, sexually assaulted somebody, or, you know, it's okay that you are a horrible person, because you know what? We're going to overlook that for our own enjoyment. That's why it happens. Because people are selfish. They don't want to have to be the person that says, no, that shit's not okay. That shit's not acceptable. What I will say, and I think this applies to the other thing I'm going to talk about, because I'm going to talk about music and movies as well. It's not just a poetry-specific thing. A lot of these people that are being protected from their own actions, because that's what it is. No one's trying to cancel these people. I hate to use that term, but I can't think of another way to describe it. No one's trying to cancel these people over nothing. And it is their own fault that it is happening, because if they didn't act the way that they did and they didn't do the things that they did, nobody would be coming for them. But what I always find interesting is that a lot of the people that are being protected from these things are not even particularly that great. So it's like, why are you still enabling them? Why are you giving them work? Why are you helping them? Like, I can think of like 5-6 different people that are way better than this person, doing the exact same thing that they're doing, but doing it like 10 times better. And they're not a shitty person. Why are you protecting this person? Why are you putting your reputation on the line for them? What for? It doesn't make sense. But like I said, this isn't just isolated to poetry. It was just that was kind of, it triggered the thought in my brain that started this whole process off, and I got really mad about it and I wrote about it. And because I saw that somebody who, women who are like actual feminists, who actually care about women and care about protecting women, they have said about this person multiple times that he should not be given platforms because he is dangerous. He is abusive. He is violent. There are multiple people that have come forward about it. And there are other women who have tried to uplift that and tried to protect people. And everywhere keeps booking him, even though, again, he's not even really that good. I can think of like several people doing the exact same thing as him, better than him. And what really fucked me, like, he's fucking nominated at some awards thing. I mean, I don't know if I should take it seriously, because this awards thing has just like come out of nowhere, so I don't even know like what the purpose of it is. I don't think it really has anything to do with any like major parts of the poetry community, as it were. I think it's, I'm a bit suspicious of it, but even if it is just like a front for something or whatever, they are still nominating a fucking piece of shit and uplifting this person as somebody in our community that should be celebrated. And like, what the fuck? I mean, most of the nominations that they've put up are all men anyway, but I mean, I expected that, but I didn't expect that, you know what I mean? Anyway, but like I said, it's not just poetry. You see it happen a lot in music, in films. For example, one of the things I was really thinking about in this poem, so Rose McGowan has spoken about Me Too in Hollywood, and she's talked about her own experiences, and that is completely fair and valid. But Rose McGowan also worked with Victor Salva in the film Rosewood Lane, and it was not a secret at the time that Victor Salva had literally gone to prison for sex offences against children, right? And at the time, Rose McGowan's career was not, like, bad. Like, she wasn't hurting for work. So it was confusing as to why she chose to work with a paedophile. And now, when people call her out on it and they say, well, you know, you're making some points and they're important about people, you know, how people shouldn't work with abusers, but you worked with a paedophile and you must have known. At the time, she basically said, oh, it's not my business. It's not my business. It's, you know, he was nice to me. It's not my business. And now she is tearing apart other women for doing the same thing. And her experiences and what she has been through is completely valid, and I support her 100% in getting justice for that. But at the same time, is it acceptable for her to have worked with Victor Salva? It's not a secret. He literally went to prison. His Wikipedia photo is his mugshot from when he was in prison, right? And at the time that the film was made, it was also not a secret that he had been to prison for crimes, sexual crimes against children. It was not something that was covered up and buried. It was very open. Which is why I was so surprised that Jeepers Creepers 3 even got made, let alone was, you know, ended up on Netflix. Like, why are Netflix platforming a paedophile? What is that? You know, it's wild. But the big question is Rose McGowan considers herself to be a big authority on feminism in the creative arts. Why couldn't she stand up and say, no, I'm not going to work with this person. I'm not going to work with this person who is abusive, who is a sexual criminal. Why didn't she do that? And, you know, it applies to other things too. In the music industry, R. Kelly was not a secret. People knew. I mean, yes, he's only really facing the consequences of his actions now, but it was not a secret. The things he had done in his life, the way that he had abused children, as well as some adult women, that was not a secret. You know, surviving R. Kelly tied everything together and made it accessible for people who maybe, you know, were living under a rock and had no idea. But if members of the public, because there were quite a lot of members of the public, this was something that I, you know, back, you know, a couple of years ago would see people discussing online, you know, on social media and forums and things like that. People, members of the general public knew. I find it very hard to believe that nobody in his own industry knew, especially as members of his own industry were talking about it and saying, we shouldn't be working with this man. He is a bad person. And yet, multiple people worked with him, particularly many women who claim the label of feminism. And they worked with him, even though he had abused women and girls. They worked with him. And they would defend themselves from that. They would say, well, he was nice to me. I didn't see anything. I didn't know anything. I don't know. You know, there are also women who claim the label of feminism that work with Chris Brown, even though, again, it is not a secret what he did. And the way that he treated Rihanna, that's not even the only time that he has been abusive towards women. So, again, it's not a secret. Why are there women who claim to be feminists who work with him? I think feminism is something that is very marketable. It's profitable at the moment. When you put feminist themes in your music, you're going to get coverage for it. People will talk about your music. Magazines will write about it. You know, publications will want to talk about it because it's a big thing. When you declare yourself a feminist, people take notice of that now. You know, before, people might have been like, oh, feminazi or whatever. But now it's marketable, it's profitable, you know. Talking about feminism, talking about femininity, what it means to be a woman, that's a good thing now in the entertainment industry. It's profitable, it's marketable, it's good. And so, you know, a lot of women... There are a lot of women who just are feminists and they talk about it and that's fine. But they live up to it and they follow what the principles mean and they are genuinely striving for equality between men and women. And they back up what they say with their actions. But then there are some people that will call themselves feminists, but then they will turn around and throw other women under the bus to profit themselves, you know. For example, there are a lot of people that are still working with Dr. Luke, even though, again, we know what's going on. We see all the things that have come out through the ordeal that Kesha has been through, other female artists coming forward and backing her up and saying, I've had experiences like that. She's not lying. And yet there are female artists who claim to be feminists who will work with him. And in some cases, when people criticize them for it, they're like throwing feminism at them and saying, well, it's very sexist of you to criticize me. And it's like, no, it's not. Girl, if you don't understand what feminism is, just say. Like, I just... It's sad to see women who will claim feminism 1 minute, but then throw women under the bus the next. It's really sad. You know, it happens in music all the time, in movies. It happens, like I said, it happens a lot in poetry. A lot of the people that... You know, for every woman standing up and saying, don't book this person, they have a history of being abusive to women, there are, you know, there'll be another woman saying, oh, well, he was never, never did any of that to me. He's fine. And it's like, girl, I really hope he sees this, sis. Like, wow. You know, like, why sell yourself out and other women for some guy who doesn't give a shit about you? Because that's the reality of this. He doesn't give a shit about you. It's like when... I remember... like when celebrities do something racist and then you have like... You know... Like one minority in the replies going, oh, it's okay, I don't mind if you say that. I don't mind if you say the N-word, it's okay. And it's like... They don't give a shit about you, bro. Like... You're really like throwing away your dignity there because they don't give a fuck about you. Like, it's sad. When you defend abusive people, like, what do you gain from that? Like, I don't get it. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, if you are enabling abusive people and you are helping them retain the platform that they have, no, you don't get to, you know, you ain't no feminist, bruv. Like, So, on the 31st of October, which is Halloween or potential Brexit Day, depending on your persuasion, I have a very special episode coming up for you. I know that episodes are normally Sundays, but it's a little Halloween treat. Let's call it that. It is a audio presentation, documentary situation kind of thing. I've been working on it for a while. I've been looking into this, you call it a movement, some would call it a religion, some would even call it a cult, and I am really looking forward to sharing that with you in a few weeks. But for now, here is a little preview of some of the interviews I've been able to get with one of the former members of the group.
I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I knew that I had to get away because it was insane. It was criminal. They're dangerous and they're gonna hurt people, and they'd kill me if they knew that I was talking to you. They would kill me. But it's important. People have to know. People have to know that the Garden of the Free Children are dangerous. I wish that I'd never met them. I know that it makes me a coward to run away and not do anything else, but they're crazy. And they'd kill me if they knew I was talking to you. Just like, sorry. Just like the others. They're monsters.
I suppose I shall need a passing Navy officer to sail in and save me from staying here stranded. Or I shall need an unbeatable bacteria to mess up the Martians in my head. I mean, don't get me wrong, they've been perfectly respectable and reasonable roommates, and I'll miss them when they end, just like I miss everything that I've lost in one way or another. But sometimes a girl just needs to sail the world alone, having sent the sailor overboard so that the wind belonged to her hair and her hair alone. Convenience is subjective. Because some people just long to be happy. And who am I to deny that? To them, to myself, to you. Maybe I need this. Maybe I need a quick fix to answer the questions I've only just realised I'm asking. It could be simplistic, inartistic, but I've spent my whole life taking the long way round to get to the same old places, and I'm really not sure it's actually enriching my life. Maybe I could tell you that everything ends in a neat and satisfying way. But I'll keep living after the curtain closes, so how would I actually know? Like, how am I supposed to know how the story ends if it's still going? You could be satisfied if I lied to you. Maybe I would be. But I suppose we'll never know if we never try. I'm unfinished, sometimes. Other times I'm magnificent, but I am always my own god from my own machine, unraveling my own difficulties and then crafting new ones so I have something to share with you. And maybe that is how our story ends, with you somewhere warm, holding me in the palm of your hand, as I gaze up, eager to tell you more of my tales. What stories do you want to hear next? Thank you. realistically, none of us gets to choose how things end. Nobody gets to decide really what their story is and how they navigate that and what happens. But that doesn't mean we don't try. It doesn't mean we don't want that, you know. Because it's hard to accept that life is just happening to you. Because you want to be in control. And you can control aspects. You can control how you react, what you do, how high you have your heating up. But it's hard to let go and just say, you know what, things are going to unfold as they're going to unfold. I can tell you that I will be in charge of how I feel about it and what I do about it. But that's all. It's difficult. But that's life, you know? And maybe sometimes things work out in a really good way and it's really simple and you can figure it out. Sometimes it's messy, sometimes it's not. You just have to learn to be okay with it. Pre-order the new holiday single, Christmas Satala Pan, and receive the radio edit immediately. Find it on your favourite music provider at jenniferwan.com. And that's all for this week's episode, but I will see you next week. You can find more of my work on my website, which is jenniferwan.com. Or you can find me on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, and all the other places with the username Miss J Squared. You can also, by the way, follow the show, this one, that you're listening to right now, on Instagram at SincerelyJenniferX, where I'll be posting previews for new episodes and things like that. Thank you to my Patreon supporters, Amanda, Kylie, Melissa, Anna, Sam, Katie, Christina, Josie, Gabriella, David, and Eleanor. And I will see you guys next week. Good night, my love.